Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 38 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your co-host Matt Kupferle, and we are back in business, joined alongside, as always, with Brock Miller and Matthew Davis. Guys, what's going on?
Hello. I was waiting for Brock to say something, but I guess he is not going to, so I will. Yeah, we haven't talked fantasy baseball in about 4 weeks, I believe. It's been a month or so, and I'm excited to hang out with you guys, see where we're at in our leagues, and catch up on some of that good stuff. We'll get into some news and notes. We'll do some buy and hold sell like we did last year. Talk about some people that are struggling and some people that might possibly be overperforming. So I'm excited to talk shop with you guys. Brock, are you there?
I'm definitely here. I was looking through a list real quick, and I figured you'd jump in there right after Matt there. So, but I'm here. It's a good time to jump back in. I think we're, you know, like you said, 4 or 5 weeks into the season. We've got some numbers to look at with some of these things. We can, you know, make some decisions on these buy, hold, sell type things with some real tangible evidence to look at. So excited to jump back in.
Yeah. Are you guys enjoying the fantasy baseball season as a whole, or are you kind of frustrated and wishing that things were going a little bit differently?
Yeah. My long answer is no.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying baseball. I've watched a lot of exciting games, and I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying baseball, but fantasy baseball wise, this has been a tough start to the season. It's real easy. It seems like every year about this time of the season, we, you know, make some sort of an illusion of like, there's never been so many injuries, but I've seen some research from some people on Twitter that really do point to there being more injuries this year than seasons past. And kind of like Jeff Erickson was saying in a podcast yesterday, he's surprised. He expected more pitchers to be hurt, and it seems like it's gone the other direction. It's more hitters. So baseball has been fun. Fantasy baseball has been a challenge. But that's what keeps you interested, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, unlike last year when we were 6 weeks in, it felt like you were either in it or out of it at this point. And so with it only being, you know, a month and a half in, or not even a month and a half in, there's quite some time to, you know, make up some ground if you are feeling a little bit like you're left in the basement. I know that Phil Dussault ran some numbers and did some data as well, kind of showing if you're, you know, in the top 100 here, you could still end up in the, in, you know, the lower 400s, and it can be on the flip side as well. So never count your eggs before they hatch. Even if you are at the top, like I'm doing okay in a few main events, and I don't feel good at all about them, to be quite honest with you. But they're definitely floating at the top for now, so that feels kind of good. But I'm not too confident. So I understand if, you know, you're looking at your numbers and seeing where you're at in the percentiles and the standings, and it can be quite frustrating because I do have some teams that are in the shitter, and I've got to figure out a way to dig myself out. But overall, it's been a fun and exciting and so far a positive fantasy baseball season for me. Matt, how about you?
Yeah, if I would have answered this question probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would have had a different answer. I had a bunch of teams off to pretty rough starts, and I'm slowly climbing my way out of that hole. So it's been better as of late. Try not to get too worked up over it. You know, we're about a fifth of the way through the fantasy season-ish. So, you know, plenty of baseball still to play. But, no, I think, you know, things are going kind of the direction I wanted to, making some lineup changes. I always kind of think, you know, May 1st is where you can get a good assessment of your team, and there's still time, you know, plenty of time to make changes or assess where it's at. And then by Memorial Day or the end of the month is where I start to really get an idea of if I think a team – you know, has contending chops or not. That's always obviously not set in stone, but I feel okay. I wouldn't say I feel great, but I feel okay in a lot of spots.
All right. Well, that's good. Well, it sounds like none of us are feeling too shitty yet. So that's a good thing for now, at least. Do you want to hop in and shoot some news and notes, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with one that I know I've got quite a few shares of, this guy, Gene Segura of the Philadelphia Phillies. He is set to return from the IL this evening. It looks like he's going to be activated over the next couple of hours. What are you guys' thoughts? Is he one that you get right back into your lineups, or are you? What do you kind of do with an injury replacement like Segura? Is it a wait and see approach?
He's an absolute start for me right now, especially with batting average being below the median, is below 250 right now. I know that it's only been 60 plus plate appearances for Segura, but he was hitting 333. The Philadelphia's Phillies lineup as a whole is struggling, to say the least, right now.
Not good, Bob.
Not good. And I think, you know, part of that is with Bryce Harper getting hit in the face, and then he's got the wrist issue. So that hasn't helped. And then Segura's been missing time. Alec Bohm's strikeout rate has been just climbing up and up and up recently, so they definitely need him. He's going to slot right back into the heart of that lineup. And any team that, I'm assuming every team needs batting average, and Gene Segura thus far has been giving that, so I would be plugging him in.
I think that's a good point. This season specifically, with batting average being down, you know, that makes him a little bit more valuable. I did just see a tweet from Alex Chamberlain from Dolph on Twitter about the type of hitters that are suffering the most from this new iteration of the major league ball, the actual ball that they're using, the changes that they made, that kind of the fringe power guys are the ones that are suffering the most here. And so in my mind, that, Segura is a guy that kind of applies there. So, you know, one home run, whatever, it was only a couple at bats that he started this season anyways, but one home run, only one stolen base, not running a whole lot there. But, you know, like you said, you're guaranteed to have somebody in your lineup that's just dragging your batting average down, that, you know, hopefully you can replace them with Segura.
Yeah, that, and comes with a career 85% contact rate. And contact rate is, you know, 80%+ right now is kind of gold to me, especially if that can help, you know, translate towards a better batting average above the mean. So, yeah, get him in your lineups if you have Gene Segura. I only have him in two draft champions, but I've already plugged him in both.
Ditto.
Now, Matthew, you mentioned another guy on that team. Bryce Harper has been in and out of the lineup. I think he's missed 7 of the last 8 games. He was hit by Genesis Cabrera of the Cardinals with a fastball. Now he's dealing with some wrist soreness. The Phillies reported that they hope he can play this evening. Are you guys, what are you doing besides obviously monitoring that situation pretty closely before games lock on Friday evening? How would you handle Bryce Harper?
I oddly don't have any Bryce Harper this year, and I guess I have to say I used to be the biggest fanboy, but he took batting practice yesterday, positive sign. Like you said, the plan is for him to be locked into that lineup this weekend, and the Philadelphia Phillies absolutely need him. Bryce is a gamer. Even if he's not going to be at 100%, I'm putting him back in my lineup, and I do expect to see him in the lineup tonight.
Yeah, cool. I don't really have a whole lot to add there. It's Bryce Harper. You know, these are tougher decisions with the fringe guys, but not your stars.
Yeah. No, I get it. All right, what are you guys doing in Toronto? George Springer returned from the IL, was mostly, if not only, playing in the DH slot for Toronto, went back on the injured list. So from that perspective, obviously get Springer out of your lineups. But the other thing to note is that Joe Panik, who had kind of assumed that left-handed bat role, depending on what pitcher was facing, I think he hit the injured list as well. So are you firing up all the righties? Teoscar Hernandez is back. Lourdes Gurriel's been struggling. You know, Randall Grichuk's been hitting the middle of the lineup. Are they a full systems go? And is Rowdy Tellez somebody you guys are putting in lineups this weekend? Or how are you handling that situation with Springer back on the IL?
Yeah, Tellez is back. Yeah, he started the season 0-for-20-something, and then it started to click a little bit there for him, and then he got sent down. The Blue Jays do desperately need left-handed hitters in that offense, but I'm not too confident in him. And then the matchup against Houston isn't a good one. They have a good rotation there. But the other guys like Randall Grichuk, he's a must. He's a must start in any format right now. He's on absolute fire, and it looks like he's pretty much locked into that fifth spot. Being bridged around the likes of Teoscar Hernandez, Vladimir Guerrero. So I have him in a couple main events, and I have been quite thrilled with him. So he's not leaving, my lineup for sure. Lourdes Gurriel, he's one that's been struggling quite a bit, which has been a little bit of disappointing to see since he was getting kind of drafted in, the early to middle rounds there in the main event. But I'm not going to be too concerned about him as well. I like the lineup, and I think some of these guys that are talented are going to come around. But the Rowdy Tellez one, if you have him in a DC, it's going to be hard unless you absolutely, you're desperate for a utility or a corner infield. I'm going to be sitting him this weekend.
Yeah, personally, I just took a look, and Houston's got three right-handers, Urquidy tonight, tomorrow Javier, and Zach Greinke on Sunday. If you're in the same position that I am in a few of these DCs where I actually have, one of those scenarios where somebody who's hurt, I just got him in my lineup, just kind of hoping that they make it back at some point this weekend because I'm choosing between a bunch of hurt guys. So at the very least, I think Rowdy's going to at least play two of the three games, if not all three games this weekend.
Go ahead, Matt.
Go ahead. No, please do.
No, I was going to say, I think that makes sense. It's Matthew, I agree. I got lucked into Grichuk in some spots. The interesting thing is, since Teoscar came back, he's been slotted right in the middle of the lineup. That team is, like you said, is searching for left-handed pop, and Vigio has been at the bottom of that lineup as well. So I'm kind of interested to see how this, kind of folds away. They're trying to figure out how to build that lineup. I think it's a fun lineup. I thought I read that they're moving to Salem Field starting in June. Did you guys see that as well? Sometime in June, or is it July?
I believe it's June, yeah. So we still got a whole the rest of this month before they make that move.
Yeah. A month of hitting in that bandbox where the ball just flies, right?
I mean, that's true. Gurriel's back. They got Gurriel in the outfield. Ooh, how are they going to fit all these guys in there?
A lot of righties, for sure. A lot of righties.
That is still early, so I won't do my victory lap on Kevin Biggio yet. But
you don't want to get crucified.
Keep doing. No, I don't want to get roasted on Twitter, but keep doing what you're doing, Kevin. Keep it up.
Well, if we stay in the division, one team that's also been a little bit banged up, the Yankees. Gio Urshela left yesterday's game early. What is interesting is Miguel Andujar is being activated off of the injured list. I haven't seen an update yet on Urshela. They were taking a look at a little bit of a balky knee that he left the game with. How are you guys handling that lineup? Obviously, we'll keep an eye closely on what happens with Urshela. Is Andujar somebody, guys, that you have ownership of, maybe in a DC format? And are you starting him this weekend as he returns?
I don't have any Andujar. So he's such a puzzling player, but let's go with what we know recently. And yeah. So one of the high stakes players, NFBC players, Hall of Famer Sean Childs tweeted back, Miguel Andujar 6-for-13 with five runs, three home runs and five RBIs in AAA. He was only highlighting that because it was just statistics from minor leagues and not it being, alternate site bullshit. So, it looks like as of now in AAA, Andujar is hitting. He is looking okay, but we do know that he has flaws that will keep him out of the lineup some days with the defense metrics. And but if the bat's going to play and he's in that lineup with that park, he's gonna get some fab buzz this weekend, I believe.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, we'll see. He's going to play tonight, I think. If they give Urshela the day off, I think they might. And they'll play him tonight against the lefty, but then he's got Max Scherzer tomorrow and Joe Ross, one of the, bigger platoon splits out of all the starting pitchers out there on Sunday. So I don't know if they're going to use him. And that's the, like Matty said, he's got some flaws. And one of those is that the glove is just almost unplayable. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there, but I could see him playing tonight.
Yeah, and that's the problem is because they want a DH, Stanton. They don't, and he's hot. Stanton is hot. And
yeah, they're not going to mess with him.
2021 batting title champion Giancarlo Stanton. Boy, he is.
Yeah, last time I looked, he was hitting like 321 or something crazy like that. But Urshela, he's getting the MRI on the knee. And it does sound somewhat of a concern. So it's just weird. You know, Andujar's got the pedigree. It used to be a big name. It's the Yankees tax that you'll get with it. If Urshela does go on the IL, like I said, there could be some fab buzz, but I still don't think there's any guarantee that he gets the bulk load of PAs throughout the week at the DH. That's for sure. And I don't see them wanting to play him in the field often. So temper expectations.
Weird situation too, because Giancarlo, of course, has been crushing it, but the rest of that lineup's been kind of shitty.
I
don't know. I was going to come up with something good to say there, and that's all I got. It's been shitty.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, they're only a tick above average in WRC plus at 105, which is just not really a New York Yankee WRC plus. And then you look at their ISO, which is their isolated power, and that's only at 159. It's not good. It's not good. They are leading the entire league in walks, though. So they got the highest walk rate. Give them that.
There's a lot of weird stuff. Like you said, the ISO for the Yankees, but probably the weirdest one, and I tweeted this out yesterday or the day before, the Mets are last in home runs and last in stolen bases in all of baseball. And actually going back to ISO, because I looked all this stuff up, it's kind of fresh in my mind, but I want to double check this before I say it for sure. But in ISO, we've got at the bottom, of course, the guys that we expected, Pittsburgh's last in isolated slugging. They've got no power. The Mets have dropped below the Pirates in isolated slugging now. So not a real surprise for the Pirates to be down there. But then there's the Padres and the White Sox right after them in 28 and 27th. It's crazy, man.
Well, hey, don't just the Washington Nationals, too. They're
in there. Yeah, Washington.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And then those
132 ISO. Through. That's insane.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. San Diego's so ISO is 125 it's weird, but if you look at that Yankees, their ISO is 159, their BABIP's 267, which is near the bottom as well. So yeah, I the lineup's going to wake up, man.
It'll be all right.
But it isn't going to be because of Miguel Andujar.
Word.
Two more guys I want to cover before we move on to talking about our teams and our buy, hold, sell. Matthew, former Dodger Kike Hernandez left yesterday's game with a hamstring strain. He is not playing tonight. He is out of the lineup. Are you sitting Kike in any leagues where you have him? They're going to Camden Yards. They're facing the Dark Knight, Matt Harvey, this evening, and Dean Kramer Sunday with to be announced tomorrow. Would normally be a major offensive weekend where you'd want to get all those Red Sox in. What are you guys doing with Kike Hernandez?
Sit. He's definitely a sit. Okay. Anytime on a Friday, if it's a fringe player like that, someone like Kike, where
exactly
he's not, an auto lock. You're looking at the volume for the week. If he's getting two games, three games, four games, what's the matchup, etc. And if he's out of the lineup on Friday, then there's no guarantee he's going to be back tomorrow. And now you're only looking at two games at the best case scenario. So for me, Kike's a sit. We saw Franchi Cordero slide in for him yesterday, but he's just been really, really bad. He did perform when he came off the bench yesterday, ironically enough, but his strikeout rate, it was at 50%. It's now down to 39.1. So he actually has trimmed it just a little bit. So maybe he's coming around a tiny, tiny bit there. So maybe Franchi Cordero gets a little bit more playing time there. But Kike as a whole is just a sit for me, and I'm not too excited about Franchi right now.
Or Christian Arroyo, because he's banged up too. He got hit on the hand with the pitch. I was watching. That sucked.
Yeah, he had gotten some opportunities at the top of the lineup as well, but I'm not too excited about any of those guys.
All right, the last one, I'm not sure you're going to be excited about him either. It's a guy that I liked last year and really struggled playing in the U.S. for his first season. Shogo Akiyama was activated, and he's starting today. Remember that they are playing with a DH this weekend. They are playing in Cleveland. He is batting ninth and in left field. Are you guys giving any kind of attention to Shogo Akiyama, or is he, you don't even care about him at this point?
No.
Yeah, I'm stacking the Reds in DFS today, and I am not touching Akiyama. It's one of those. It just it's not going to hurt you to wait and to see it a couple times before you start to buy in.
Well, that and the problem is, I know that Joey Votto just hit the shelf. The problem is we saw it with Tyler Naquin, right? When Jesse Winker's in there and Castellanos is going to be in there. I know that they're giving Senzel some time at second base, so maybe that opens up some time for Akiyama. But I just think that there's still – I think that when they're not playing in the American League with a DH, I just think that they're still a little bit short-sighted there, which makes it a little bit tough for him, especially because we are seeing people, the playing time and the volume, even with the superstars getting days off here and there. I'm not confident in the playing time. And then on top of that, he's a left-handed hitter, so you might not see him against left-handed pitching at all. So, and then you're not guaranteed to see him all the time against right-handed starting pitching. So it's too much of question marks of playing time for me.
Yeah. It's kind of what we had preseason with them was, we had a few bats that we liked from that team, and it's kind of hard to figure out like where everybody's going to fit in. And they're kind of still shuffling things around like that. I can see Moustakas is playing first base today and Senzel's at second, like you were saying. They're DH and Winker. Suarez has slid back over to third base for today there, and Kyle Farmer's playing short. They're going to play a lot of musical chairs there. Hopefully you just have other options, yeah.
Yep, makes total sense. All right, do you guys want to talk a little bit about some buy, hold, sell with some players? Go through a couple. I made a list of some guys I'm kind of interested to get your takes on, and some guys that I own, some guys that I don't own. So I was going to run through and just kind of see what you guys are thinking about, especially with some guys that are making some news. So let's start with maybe some of the buzzier players in Major League Baseball. And there's probably nobody getting more attention than John Means. He threw a kind of asterisk or in quotes no hitter. Only batter that reached base was a drop third strike from Pedro Severino, which I think he either was promptly picked off or caught stealing on the very next play or next couple of pitches. So incredible effort from John Means. Means was a guy last year that was very strong for the Orioles, but gave up way too many home runs, almost 2.5 home runs per 9 innings pitched. That was his big bugaboo last year. The biggest thing I think for Means right now, doesn't have a lot of premium velocity, but what he's done is he's completely ramped up and spiked and thrown a ton of changeups this year, kind of ditched a slider that he had showcased the previous year, and he's got a 30% strikeout rate so far this year. So, Brock, let's start with you. Not sure. I play in quite a few leagues where trading's involved. Obviously, if you drafted him in an FBC format where there's not trading involved, you're holding on to Means for dear life. But is Means a guy that you're a believer in so far this season with the sparkling numbers, or do you think there could be some troubles coming along the way?
Yeah, I definitely believe in John Means, but if we're talking about trading, there's going to be a premium on him. The edge to buy John Means has kind of passed you by at this point. So, I definitely believe in what he's done so far before, and it's probably going to end up in some of my DFS lineups, over the course of the season, but I'm not sure that trading for him right now, somebody's going to be thinking that they're selling high on him. I'm not sure you're going to get much of a deal out of him, but for what it's worth, 31.6 chase called strike plus whiff rate, which is, for context, 25th out of 140 qualified pitchers, something like that. So ace numbers there. You mentioned the velocity, and it's a little bit lower on average this year than last year, but it's still up there in a level that he used to produce really good results last year, and it's been ticking up with each start this season. So I think he's ramping up a little bit there. And, like you said, that changeup, I think a good, fastball, like a good changeup that plays off of your fastball is probably, in my opinion, replacing like the good fastball slider as the number one combination to have. I mean, these guys, especially a left-handed guy, go out there and fade that thing away from the right-handed batters. And of course, lefty on lefty is the lowest of all splits that exist out there. So
yeah,
I really like Means, but I'm not going to say to go out and trade for him right now either.
Do you own any John Means, Brock? Were you?
No, no. And looking back on it, it stings. It stings a little bit. You look at his ADP and you know, just kind of an average ADP across all leagues in NFBC. And he's back there with, like, you know, Erod, David Price. Those guys didn't even pitch last year. You know, he's back there with James Paxton, who is talented as he is. He's always hurt. And then right there in the middle of it, you got John Means, who, you know, if you took a look at the numbers, even if a little bit of a step back, man, I should have been drafting him over those other guys. And I'm not going to lie, I've got a couple James Paxton there. And, you know, looking back on things, that was a little bit of a mistake.
Yeah, sometimes that name tag will fuck you over. And that's what Paxton did to a lot of folks.
Yeah.
So a positive, we're looking at a career high in the K-minus walk rate at 24.1%. He's got a career walk rate of 5.5%, so he's not allowing a lot of guys to get on base, which is great. I will say, so the one thing that I noticed that kind of stood out a little bit to me was the barrel rate. He's already allowed 11 barrels. That's equal to 10.4%, which is a little bit higher than his career average of 7%. So he is allowing a little bit more barrels, but overall, the landscape looks really good for him. And his next matchup is against the National League team, the struggling New York Mets, who come in 29th in ISO against left-handed pitchers at 107. Oddly enough, though, the New York Mets, they lead the league against left-handed pitching in walk rate at 17%, but John Means isn't walking anybody, so something's going to have to give in his next matchup there. He's missing. So the Orioles get a game on Monday against the Red Sox. He's missing that matchup. And then over the weekend, they're facing the Yankees for three games. He's going to miss that matchup, which is nice. And then he's going to roll into a two-step starting May 17th. So at least for now, the next couple of weeks are looking pretty good, and everything underneath the hood looks good. So keep rolling them.
Yeah. Nope. Fair enough.
I've got real quick. I'm gonna yeah. Skip your next hitter real quick. I want to go off another pitcher real quick.
Yeah.
And it's Robbie Ray. He has said that he's figured it out. You know, we know that he tinkers, he adjusts, mechanical issues, this and that. The walk rate's just been atrocious every single year since 2017. It's been north of 10%. In 2020, it was nearly 18%. Right now, we're seeing it at less than 8%. The strikeout rate's at 25%. The velocity looks good. He's not getting hit, you know, very hard at 35.9%. Are you guys, do you have any Robbie Ray? Have you been watching him? Are you intrigued by him? What are you guys seeing? Because everything I'm seeing, besides the tiny, tiny Little League jersey that he's fitting into, he looks phenomenal.
Oh, come on. Don't lie. You like those pants. You like his tight pants.
only on Walker Buehler and Gavin Lux is that okay.
That's awesome. Yeah, man, Robbie Ray, the fastball velocity is up a little bit there. You know, like you said, he's kind of reined in the walks a little bit, and that makes a big difference. And so he's selling out a little bit for it. So the strikeout rate, still a good strikeout rate, but it is down from what he's done years past. And that tells me that he's made a little bit of a change to his approach. You know, he's not trying to go out there and strike out literally everybody. And, you know, the stuff's playing up a little bit and mixing in that new approach, being a little bit less afraid of giving up some contact there. You know, he's the type of guy that I kind of want to dig through. You know, what's his first strike rate look like? Is that up? Those kinds of things. Because I, you know, just take a look at the outside numbers there. Looks pretty good to me.
Look at the zone rate, dude. That alone, just he's 49.1 versus last, you know, 2020 was 36.2. Yeah, look at. I mean, 40.
That's yeah, there it is. The first strike rate, 65%.
Yes.
The first strike rate's up 15%.
Uh huh. And the swinging strike rate is at 14.6. So the strikeout rate alone hasn't correlated. You know, it's only at 25%. We've seen it north of that before. But the walk rate's going down. The swinging strike rate's going up. The zone rate, the first strike rate, even the CSW at 30.2%. That's above the career high. It's beautiful. The O swing is going up. He's even getting more swings in the zone, but he's not allowing that much contact. I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, he's kind of, I think we might be getting the Robbie Ray that we've been wanting for the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, that is like 75th percentile, called strike plus whiff rate. That's good.
Yeah. And if you correlate that with his stuff, you've got something pretty good there. Yeah, so as long as the mechanics and adjustments, he has said that he has figured that out. And if that is true and he can keep that walk rate sub even 10%, man. I think that good things could be coming. And this is in a tough park to pitch in, wherever it is, if it's in Florida or if it's in Buffalo, tough division to pitch in. And he's fared quite well thus far. I know that it's only, you know, 5 starts, 28 innings, but I really do like what I see. And look at the whip. Like nobody, you know, we always dig into analytics and metrics and all this other stuff. But, I, you know, whip is the category that we do play for, walks, hits per innings pitched. And it's at 1.15, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Right. I think everything that you said, Matthew, the biggest thing for me, I mean, you guys highlighted, Robbie Ray was often working behind in the count. You know, he had a 52.2% strike rate last season, first pitch strike rate. He's at 65.5% right now. So, like you mentioned, with all the stuff and the way he attacks his own, just throw more freaking strikes and you'll be fine. I think that's what he's doing, which is why you're seeing that walk rate come up for sure.
Maybe the adjustment's just from the tiny jersey.
It could be. It might be restricting his blood flow and he might not be able to get his full range
of movement. Yeah, it's like, no, seriously, it's like helping him not open up as much or something. I don't know. It's like, he's not like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just, I don't know.
Something, and then I went and looked, and I was like, oh, my God. What is
going on? He's competing with Walker Buehler now. Like, there is now, Walker now has competition, so I'm expecting Walker to come out with his pants just a little bit tighter the next time out.
Yeah, for sure. He's been
called out.
For sure.
Yep.
One guy I wanted to get your guys' opinion on as we move to a hitter, Matthew, as you mentioned, is Byron Buxton. You know, the talent I don't think has ever been the question with Buxton. It's just been a matter of playing time. And he did, again, tease us with, hey, is he ever going to stay healthy? He got hurt again and left yesterday's game running out an infield ground out in the ninth inning yesterday. What are your guys' thoughts on Buxton? Is it for Buxton, is it purely a function of playing time? If the guy puts in 140 games, are you guys believers, or do you think he's made an incremental step change to what he's doing as a player, and he's taking that next step forward?
Yeah, I would buy in. Unfortunately, I only have him in one of like 16 leagues, so I missed the boat. I had been in on Byron Buxton in previous years. This year, I wasn't in on him, unfortunately, because of two reasons. The health, which we have seen a couple of times this season crop up. Fortunately, he hasn't hit the IL for any of them yet, and he's kind of been working through, you know, these little dings and dents that he's been having. And then the other was because I wasn't a believer in him becoming some 30, 40-plus stolen base guy. His career high was in 2017 at 29, but then it's been drying up ever since 2019 significantly. And then the Minnesota Twins, if you look at their track record over the over Rocco Baldelli's tenure, they simply just don't run a lot. And that maybe that's a lineup context thing, that they just want to let the guys at the plate, you know, kind of handle their business. So they're not running a lot. So those were the two components, the health and then the lack of speed that I think people were over projecting for him, kind of tempered my expectations on him. But I was a little bit of a believer in the bat, seeing, you know, where the ISO was creeping up over the last few years. In 2019, it was 251. In 2020, it was 323. These are like video game numbers that aren't even really as sustainable. And then this year, it's leading the league at 402, or at least it was the last time I kind of looked at the top 10. He was also leading the league, or he was in the top three in WRC plus. I mean, the bat, it seems like he is maturing. He is developing. I know that he wants to stay healthy. That was his biggest goal this season. It wasn't to steal 50 bases or to become the next Ricky Henderson or to do any of these other, you know, things for fantasy purposes. It was to stay healthy. So I think he is becoming more cognizant of it, and the team is going to, you know, they're going to maintenance him. So he's going to be day to day for now. It doesn't sound like the hip strain is too severe that's going to put him on the IL. Hopefully it doesn't. I'm a believer in him, and it's not for the speed though. So if you're looking to trade for Byron Buxton, you need to be trading for him in the other three category, you know, the power, the counting stats, et cetera.
What about you, Brock?
Yeah, I'm definitely a believer in the bat. You know, he's never hit a bunch of home runs for us before, but I think that he's kind of there. Obviously, the power's there. We've seen it. You see it with the max exit velocity. Those kinds of metrics kind of tell you what's happening there. But the strikeout rate ticks down every year. You know, when he stole 29 bases, you know, he was a 30-35% strikeout rate guy. You know, a guy that we never figured would hit over 230 or whatever. So, you know, maybe he's not going to steal a ton of bases for you or whatever, but that strikeout rate coming down is going to lessen the burden on the batting average there. And obviously the power is real and the health is just, it's anybody's guess.
No.
It's unfortunate because I really do see, like, let's say he does put together a 140 game season this year, right? And, he's able to figure it out health-wise. I'm really intrigued to see what kind of season he could put together. I mean, like, I know he can't keep the pace that he's on, but I'm not the biggest. Oh, it's painted red. Look at all this red, like people do. But man, his baseball savant's pretty sickening too. So. I believe in him. If you want him, go get him. Try and trade for him. Try and tell the person in the league that he's hurt again and he's not stealing bases, blah, 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 blah. I know he's got a couple of them, but a couple stolen bases. But, I would try and go get him. I think he's pretty legit.
All right, I got a wild card for you. A guy I don't know how I didn't put on our list, but one that's been absolutely amazing lately, including also throwing a no-hitter a couple starts ago. Madison Bumgarner of the Diamondbacks. He has won two of his last three starts. He's been kind of unbelievable in his last four starts now. Overall season stats don't look great. He's got an ERA just under 5 with a whip of 1.09. But if you take out those first couple starts, in the last month he's thrown 32 and two-thirds innings. He's got an ERA of 3.86 and a 0.92 whip. With better than a strikeout per inning. So Bumgarner looked pretty much cooked last season. What are you guys thinking about Mad Bum? Are you buying that this is a true resurgence, or is it just a run of good starts?
He made the Fab article last week in the look ahead part because, you know, the recent trends, like you mentioned, the outing against Washington, Atlanta, and Colorado, they were all phenomenal. And then this week he got a start against the Miami Marlins and he did well again. 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, no walks, with only one earned run. And then he was part of that look ahead because of his upcoming schedule. So this now upcoming week, you're going to be seeing him get 2 home starts, one against Miami, who he just faced. And then the next is against the Washington Nationals. The Juan Soto-less can't hit, can only throw Washington Nationals. And they've been pretty blah as it is, to put it lightly, for them. So it looks like the momentum can certainly keep going for Madison Bumgarner as he looks to, you know, go into a pretty good looking, you know, two-step next week. The strikeout rate, 26.1%. We have not seen Madison Bumgarner have a strikeout rate of that since 2016, when he ended with a 27.5% strikeout rate. So we are seeing I don't know how he's doing it, but he's doing it. We are seeing him do that. He's now limiting the barrel rate. It's down to 7.1%, which is literally more than 50% less than it was in 2020 when he was giving up a 15% barrel rate, which is just absolutely absurd. And then when you look at his pitch mix, there's really not much that's changing. He's throwing a little bit less of the fastball. I don't know, man. The first pitch strike, that's down. It's hard for me. I haven't watched a lot of him, but just looking at the numbers, I know that he's pitching well, but I'm just not sure. You know, Brock, have you seen anything is on the mound that he's doing differently? Is the usage of the pitches, you know, the blending of them bad? I just don't know. But he's doing good.
Yeah, to start at the beginning, I actually drafted a decent amount of Bumgarner solely based on the principle of guy that was pretty good for a really long time suddenly disappeared. I'm never going to buy that. Like, you know, we expect these guys to tail off when they get older and stuff like that. You know, but he wasn't 40 years old, right? He's, 31, he's 32, you know, or he's about to turn 32 rather. So I just based on that alone, I drafted a decent amount of them, and I'm glad because I've been able to use them. The CSW's up, you know, like you said, he's getting the strikeouts like he hadn't been the last couple of years. There's CSW's up, swinging strike rate supports that. You know, the first strike rate being down, the only thing I can think of here is, you know, I mean, if he's throwing a little less strikes, if he's, you know, getting hit hard inside of the zone, maybe he's throwing the ball out of the zone a little bit more. It's kind of helping him miss some bats there. So I expected him to make a comeback. I didn't really expect him to be like an ace again or anything like that. But I definitely expected him to be a useful pitcher this year. So I'm really not surprised to see, you know, that his numbers have kind of been, you know, back in line with where they were. You know, they're not back to 2019. They're a little bit better than that, but they're not out of that range of what he did in 2019. And, you know, so for me, 2020 just looks like an absolutely clear outlier for me. So I'm good with Mad Bum.
Well, how about this real quick, actually? So 2016 was his last, are we going to say 2017, he got hurt, right? So 2016 was still really good, Madison Bumgarner. Right? 220 plus innings, 2.74 ERA. That's the really good Madison Bumgarner. Okay. Then in 2017, we still saw a good Madison Bumgarner. However, it was only 111 innings pitched. That was from bruised ribs, sprained left shoulder. Was that the dirt bike accident or the rodeo accident or whatever? It was one something, right? Okay. So So let's put this together. So in 2017, he was good, but he only had 111 innings pitched, and that was with 85 days on the IL due to bruised ribs and a sprained left shoulder. Sprained left shoulder, his throwing shoulder. Okay. So then in 2018, he goes back on the IL for a fractured left hand for 69 days. Nice. Okay. So in 2018, he only threw 129 innings pitched, but still had a 3.26 ERA. The strikeout rate went down, but everything was still okay, let's say, but the volume wasn't there. So in two straight seasons after him being a complete horse, from 2011 to 2016, we see in 2017 and 2018 injuries that limit his total innings pitched, but he was still able to put together a decent quality amount of innings pitched. Then in 2019, we had the juice ball. Along with that, he had an okay season. He went over 200 innings pitched, but the ERA crept up to 3.9, which ain't that bad. Then he leaves, right, and gets this contract with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and everything just went to complete shit. Like, it was just terrible. In 2020, though, it was a short season, and he had mild back strain. So when you have a mild back strain and you're pitching on a new team and you miss half the season, so he has 26 days on the IL, half of the season was missed due to a back strain, we've only seen one really, 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 really bad Madison Bumgarner. It was last year, new team, short season, weird off season, weird spring training, and then he had a back strain that missed half the season. So what if he's all – remember how I said, I don't know what was going on. How is he doing this? Maybe he was just not healthy. I mean, he wasn't. Maybe he is healthy now.
Yeah, and I think we need to temper expectations a little bit too, because, you know, we always think of Mad Bum as an ace and stuff like that, but – you know, when you're talking an ace, we're talking pitchers where we see, you know, 6-win, 7-win seasons, you know, a couple seasons in a row or whatever. And Mad Bum was basically like a 3 or 4 win pitcher every year through his whole prime. You know, like he was definitely a good pitcher, but was never really on that level of, you know, some of those other aces during that time and stuff like that. So, you know, 2019, you know, the bad ball, the bouncy ball, you know, probably contributed to that almost 4 ERA there or whatever, but still in, you know, normalizing for the ball, you know, comparing him to other pitchers in 2019, he was still a 3.5 win pitcher. He was still pretty close to the same pitcher that he was before. So yeah, I'm going to underline what you were saying. 2020's the outlier. I think he's fine.
Would you guys be shocked if he did just as good or equal to or similar to Kyle Hendricks this year?
Yeah, he's going to strike out more guys than Kyle Hendricks, because everybody's going to strike out more guys than Kyle Hendricks as far as like run.
Right. Well, then, what if you're getting him healthy, and he's going to give? What if he's able to give you the 200 plus innings like we've seen before because he's healthy? Well, that's just so the fact that's valuable. It's extremely valuable.
Yeah, just the fact that the question's been posed kind of tells you all you need to know about that. One of those guys was going like 85th overall towards the end of draft season. Where was Mad Bum? You know, outside the top 200, right?
Oh, way outside the top three or four.
He went out drafted a couple of my leagues, especially my online championships.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah,
I did get him way late in those DCs early on, and I just the fact that we're asking this question right now, I think tells you all you need to know.
Right, yeah. And his ownership now in the NFBC main event is up to 100%, and people are believing in it too because he was started in 95% of those leagues this week. So, yeah, his stock is on the rise. Good for him, and I'm rooting for him. To be honest with you. So I hope he's able to put together a decent season. He brought a lot of electricity to the mound, and I like that, you know, stuff out of a pitcher. So good for him. All right, Maddie, keep going.
Yeah. I want to highlight a couple guys. We talked about some guys that have been off to really good starts. I'd love to get your guys' opinion on a couple of guys that are really struggling, and probably the biggest draft name that I can think of that is just you guys, I think have highlighted in different ways. Probably the highest drafted player that I can see that's really struggled is Francisco Lindor as a Met. Mm. I mean, it's been tough if you're a Lindor owner. He has truly been awful to roster so far this season. What are you guys thinking about Lindor? Were you drafting heavy shares of Lindor? And whether you are or weren't or did not, how are you handling a guy like Lindor? Is he somebody you're trying – if you play in a trading league, are you getting rid of him? Or just a slow start and you think he's about to bounce back soon? Because that whole lineup has been really rough so far this year.
So when it comes to, let's say, the NFBC main event, my preparation when it comes to these live events, the high-stakes drafts, everything's completely different than when it was in December and January, right, when you're getting a feel for ADP and in February. I have one share of Francisco Lindor, and unfortunately, it is in the podcast baseball league that I'm in representing us, but I do have Francisco Lindor there, and I drafted him in the second round. The reason why I mentioned at the beginning about the preparation going into the main event and to the high-stakes drafts is there was zero chance that I would have ever ended up with Lindor, and it's not because I didn't like him or anything like that, but I had Corey Seager ranked ahead of him. So for me, if I was in the second round and I was looking to get a shortstop, it was going to be Corey Seager over Francisco Lindor 10 times out of 10. So, it was pushing me out of the market, you know, come main events, but now seeing what we've seen, knowing what we know, it's been brutal. It's been really, really, really brutal. Do we even need to go into like metrics and analytics and any of that, or just, I mean, it's just been bad.
There's only one thing that's happening, you know, he's just not swinging.
Yeah. His walk rate's at a way, 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 way career high of 14.3%. That's 6% above his career high. He's not striking out as much, but he is walking a lot. And you would say, oh, well, look at his – he's got a higher walk rate than strikeout rate. Usually that correlates to some goodness, right? You're like, okay, he's on to something. He's on to something. But it's been tough, man. He's still making the contact. His elite contact rate is there. When he swings the bat, it's at 83.1%. That's good. But he's not making hard contact. The ISO is like an ISO that I would have if you put me in the box. It's like worse than Victor Robles ISO. So, new contract, new city, the Big Apple, pressure, new team. Anytime somebody goes to a new team, I kind of get a little leery at first. New clubhouse, new division, new pitching. New league. You get the $300+ million. He hasn't seen a lot of these pitchers. There's a lot that's going against him right now, but he's going to figure it out. He's a very, very talented player. He's highly motivated, and he wants to be great. So eventually things will begin to click, but the hole that he has dug for teams in, like, let's say the main event, and if you drafted him in the mid to early second round, I haven't looked. I have not looked and done the data or research, but I'm sure there's not many Francisco Lindor teams in the main event that are just absolutely thriving right now.
Yeah, it's hard, for sure.
It is. And no stolen bases, too. You're fucking walking 14% of the time. Fucking get over to second base and do some good. Guys aren't scoring any damn runs. Seriously, though, fucking run. What are you doing? You're getting paid $300 million. Run. It just fucking pisses me off, man. Like, what? Okay, you're getting on base, you know, 14% of the time you're walking. Run, then. Do something.
I have missed Matty Wood rants for the last month of my life, and that just made me
sorry. Dumb. Yeah, nope. I don't know why. I'm sure you're there, but
I'm serious. They're one of my favorite parts of the whole podcast. I love them. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, he feels the pressure. Then do something if you're on base. You got on base. Fucking get in scoring position.
I hear you.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand Lindor. This is. I'm with you, Matt. I didn't really end up with a whole lot of them just because, you know, I was either, you know, had a high draft pick and was, you know, maybe taken Tatis or somebody like that or whatever. But and then if not, I really like Dansby Swanson, who's just been absolutely fucking amazing himself. I didn't end up with a lot of Lindor either. So it's really strange. The only real difference, you know, here is. He's not swinging a lot. He's swinging 15% less often than he normally does, which is kind of an unprecedented drop. The unprecedented drop in exit velocity, you know, he's been a guy, solid exit velocity guy, 70th, 80th percentile for, you know, year on year. And then all of a sudden 34th percentile, like all of a sudden just, you know, the bottom's falling out of the whole thing. You know, the sprint speed's still there. I wonder, is there a
it's pressure. It's pressure, dude.
But because like a guy struggling a little bit in a new league, like I definitely expect that, you know, like, and I thought of that when we were drafting in March, you know, he's going to a new league. Like those are things I take into account, the amount of struggle that's come from him. Cause the, you know, like you said, the contact rate's the same. You know, the strikeout rate's the same. Like all of those things are still there. It's just he's not swinging. When he does, he doesn't hit the ball hard. You know, all this kind of, like, I wonder, is there a hand injury? Is there a wrist injury? Is something sore and he's just trying to push through it because of all that, you know, pressure to perform with the contract? I've got to wonder, is something hurt? Because you just don't see this year on year, just completely the bottom drops out of things like that.
Two throwing errors. He's at his lowest, as of now, career fielding percentage. And I've never 0.1 in WAR right now for Francisco Lindor, who at least at the beginning of the season, we're like, undoubtedly he's the greatest defensive shortstop in the league. You know, better than Andrelton Simmons. I've seen him make some weird, even some of the throws to first, you know, to Alonso that haven't airmailed him or been short. Like, I don't know, man. It just, I feel like the mental part of the game right now might be creeping into his head a little bit. The pressure. Let's say it is that, not a wrist injury. If you knew there wasn't a wrist injury and you bought into the pressure narrative, would you look to buy him or trade for him in a trading league? I'm sure somebody would be willing to sell him low.
I think that's where your decision lies. If you think it's pressure, you buy. If you think it's a wrist or a hand, then you don't buy. I think regardless of which one of those two things it is, it's looking a lot like in 2022, I'm going to have a decent amount of Francisco Lindor, because whether this turns out to be a trash year or if he rebounds or whatever, the price next year, you know, I'm not going to expect the value to be anything different than what I thought it was preseason this year. So I think there's going to be some value next year at the very least.
Yeah, I don't even care. You're totally right on that. I absolutely agree. Even if, let's say, he gets back to his norm from what we saw in 2018, 2019, right, for the rest of the year, his draft cost has already dropped at least a round. Yep. So you're looking at regardless of if he balls out from here on out, he's a third round, fourth round pick at this point. So,
yep.
Yeah, I like that call.
Word.
Another one you guys touched on early that I have quite a few shares of, so I'm actually really curious to hear your guys' thoughts, is Alec Bohm of the Philadelphia Phillies.
Really, you were feeling good at the beginning, weren't you?
I was. I was happy with the home run yesterday, and there's some interesting Statcast metrics, but he's just not hitting the ball enough, literally just not making enough contact. What are you guys doing with Bohm and how are you handling him? Because honestly, in a 12-team format, he's getting real close to just getting the old straight cut from me at this point in time.
It's the strikeouts. They've just been creeping up and up and up. It's not good, right? And then when you look at the whole, or if you zoom out a little bit, he's still in his rookie season, man.
Yeah.
He had 44 games last year, right? He's at 32 games this year. If you grab those and put them together, that's only 76 major league games. This is not even a guy that's played a half of a full season yet. So there's going to be warts. There's going to be, you know, bumps in the road. It's not like everybody's going to just continue to excel at this early of their career. And we are seeing that with him. The batting average at 219, that's really bad. The strikeouts, man, we didn't see that. We haven't seen it from him, and now we are. So, like, even last year in 2020, it was at 20%, which you'll take that all day for his age and youth and, you know, with the maturation process that he has. It's at 26.6% now, but if you would have, you know, looked at it 2 weeks ago compared to where it's at now, I think it's, like, spiked north of 30% over that time. So that's a huge concern for me. I don't know. I don't have any of them just because of the cost. Where it was for me, where he was going, I was more in on the Austin Riley camp a few rounds later. That just ultimately ruled me out. If I didn't have, one of those third basins that I wanted up top, I was kind of looking at Justin Turner or Austin Riley. So for me, I didn't get any of him, but I had him last year on a main event and he did very, very, very well, in that short stint. And then this year, at the beginning of the season, like we discussed at first, Zach Betancourt, one of my main event partners, messaged me. He was like, damn, man, we really missed out on Bohm. I was wrong about him, is what Zach said. And I was like, yeah, he's looking pretty good. But, you know, it's crazy what a marathon will do. And Brock can tell you that because he does those in actual real life. They will humble you, right? Marathons will humble you. And that's what we're going to be getting this year is a marathon. Last year was a sprint. And so the marathon of the season is going to be humbling a lot of players this year. And I think Alec Bohm might be one of them.
Yeah, definitely. There was a few things there. And, you know, you hit on most of them there. The strikeout rate at 27% this year versus 20 last year. That's a big difference. You know, don't overlook that. That's 30% more strikeouts. And then, you know, the batting average on balls in play is super low. I wouldn't expect it to be, you know, this low for the rest of the season or anything like that. But last year it was over 400. So when you combine 150 points of batting average of balls in play regression with 30% more strikeouts, it's not going to be pretty. And so it hasn't been. But I'm with you, Matt. Same thing. There were known quantities there. You know, it was him or Justin Turner. And guess what? You're going to draft Bohm with the idea that maybe he can do what Justin Turner is going to do. And you already know what Justin Turner is going to do. So I was in the same boat. There was just definitely safer ways to go about filling a corner infield or third base or whatever at that point in the draft. That said, it's going to end up somewhere in the middle. I think, you know, I'm looking at the projections and I didn't look at them enough preseason to be able to just know offhand. But I'm guessing that the rest of the season projections for him haven't changed a whole lot. If you're comparing him to the preseason stuff, it's all kind of the same. He's been a little bit unlucky and swinging and missing a little bit too much there. I think it's going to help him too. That Philly lineup can't be this bad as it's been. I mean, it's been bottom five in baseball this season, and it can't be that bad the rest of the season. I don't think we expect him to be, you know, San Diego or LA or anything like that. But, just that team getting a little bit better. And getting a little bit healthier. I think a lot of things are going to kind of combine there. And he's going to do the rest of the season what we expected him to do.
Yeah, out of 43 main events, on average, he was the 16th third baseman drafted. And that was the head of Matt, one of your boys, Tommy Edman. And then Matt Chapman and Chris Bryant were the three that were going after him on average. And then you had Gene Segura, Justin Turner, Gio Urshela, Josh Donaldson, Willie Castro, Ryan McMahon, and Austin Riley. So, I get it why he was going ahead of those guys because of what he did in 2020, and then the youth and the hype. And I wouldn't consider him dead at all. But the strikeout rate is going to concern me. If that continues to tick up and the contact rate ticks down, you could have some, you know, tough weeks for Alec Bohm. But he's stolen two bases already, which is a major league career high. So you got that.
All right. Well, our last player we're going to talk about before we wrap up the show is Luis Castillo of the Cincinnati Reds. Castillo was a big high draft pick for a lot of players this year, and he's been another guy that's really struggled. Over 29 and two-thirds innings pitched, he's kind of killed your ratio so far. He's allowed 1.5 home runs per nine. That's led to a 6.07 ERA. Ugh. And with a whip of 1.62, he's only got an 18% strikeout rate this season. Walks are still in line, but after posting a career mark of 26.5%, he's down almost 8 full ticks to 18% this season. Just getting absolutely hammered so far this year. Barrel rate is sky high. Fly balls for him. He's kept those fairly well in check, but the line drive rate is up. What are you guys thinking about Luis Castillo? He has had slow starts in the past that people have highlighted in April.
The fuck's going on?
Yeah, Matt, you're cutting out.
Matt, there. Are you all right?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, mute for a second and recalibrate, and I'll take it from here. Castillo has allowed too much of a contact rate, to put it lightly. 78.2% is too much. He's increased the changeup rate. He's decreasing the fastball and slider rate. The changeup rate's nearly 40%, which was a new career high, which I think is too much. You know, he needs to throw the fastball more. There's been narratives about him getting a feel for the ball in the cold, not pitching well at the beginning of the season. The barrel rate is up to 8%, which is north of his career high as well. He's allowing a hard hit rate of only 20%. So that was a little bit shocking to me to see that he's not getting hit hard, but he's allowing a little bit. And the barrel rate at 8% isn't even really that alarming, to be honest with you. So I think that there's a little bit of bad luck involved. I think the feeling of the ball and the weather, pitch usage, I think of those components are going to kind of figure themselves out like we've seen over the last couple of years. Data would suggest, or statistics would suggest, that once it kind of warms up, which it has been, and his last outing was quite a bit better. I believe it was against the Cubs. And so I think that he's going to be trending in the right direction, certainly. So I would not look to sell low. I would look to buy, if anything. He's healthy. And he says that he feels good. He was the 10th pitcher on average drafted in the main event. And I'm sure this is going to sting, but a lot of people took him right before Brandon Woodruff. And, you know, Tyler Glasnow, of course. But, Luis Castillo, I think that he'll be fine. I would look to buy him if someone wants to ship him. I'll take him.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys. People talked about it before the season started and I ignored them. And then in DFS, I lit money on fire by ignoring them. A couple cold starts there and he was really bad. Just can't quite get the feel for the changeup when it's really cold out. And that kind of makes sense, you know, if you're familiar with the changeup grip and how that works and, you know, the cold weather and then maybe if the seams are a little bit lower as well, I don't know.
Do you think the increase in changeup would almost suggest that he's throwing it more to get a feel for it?
You know, honestly, for me, that changeup is such a fantastic pitch that it kind of feels like when Denelson Lamet started throwing a shit ton of sliders, it was his best pitch and nobody could hit it. And it kind of seems like, you know, in the right circumstances, if you know, when it starts to warm up, like when we get into summer, you know, so basically the rest of the season from here on out with Castillo, if he's going to throw that changeup more, I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, get even more whiffs than he had in seasons past. I kind of like that. I obviously hadn't worked out yet, but I think this is going to be super interesting to take a look at when we get back to the end of the summer.
Yeah, and that strikeout, his strikeout rate is 18%, guys. That's not going to hold. That thing's going to tick up. And then on the bright side of things, he's at a career low in walk rate. So the walk rate's only 6% right now, which is absolutely phenomenal. And if he gets that, and if he gets his strikeout rate back up to even a career norm, you're now looking at a K-minus walk of 20% or more. So, yeah, I would definitely look to be getting some more of Luis Castillo if available.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think he's a buy. I don't, you know, maybe this year is not going to look as good. Maybe he's not going to be the 10th pitcher off the board next year or anything
maybe
like that.
Maybe he's a buying opportunity, another buying opportunity.
Yeah.
And we're going to draft Luis Castillo and Francisco Lindor next year.
Looks like it.
There you go.
I don't know what happened. Did we lose Matt for good?
No, I think still sound like a robot. Or am
no, it sounded like you were in that movie Twister.
You fell down a black hole.
Well, thank God there's not a Midwestern tornado, so I am.
I know. Sorry, I don't want to jinx you being out in Missouri right now.
No, it's fine. I do appreciate it. I appreciate it. So
yeah, I thought the Twilight Zone got a hold of you.
Maybe Luis Castillo's changeup got a hold of me. I'm not sure.
That's right.
All right, anything else, fellas? I know we're at about the hour mark, which is around where we normally like to keep it. It was really good catching up with you guys. Anything? Brock is running. He's unsure. Brock's either running a 50K or a 50-miler tomorrow. I hope you maybe have to run 100 miles tomorrow at this point just for shits and grins. But Brock,
what's the deal with that?
I can't remember what I signed up for. It was a dark time here kind of early on in the year before drafts were really happening, and I signed up for a bunch of races, and I can't remember what I signed up for. And I've been preparing this whole time to run the 50-miler, but might be a chance I get out there and find out that I signed up for the 50K, which is okay. I'll just have to bump the pace a little bit, but I'm ready. I can't wait.
That's awesome. Well, we're both looking forward to seeing pictures and hearing how you do in that, because I myself am not Forrest Gump and cannot do 50 to 100 miles in a day. But being a mailman, I get my 15 miles in a day. But that's about it for me. That's where I tap out. So,
you know, I would like to give a shout out. There's a bunch of my running buddies are out there. There's finishing up out in Arizona. It's called the Concordia 250. It's a 250-mile race, and there are actually people that are finishing it right now.
Brock, where, if you don't mind me asking, when you're on a 250-mile race, where do you go poop?
Wherever. I mean, okay. You know, that's
what
that's
I figured.
Like,
there's not like porta potties like every 2 miles on the course, is there?
No. So there are aid stations. Most races, that 250-miler is a unique scenario. I don't know what they're doing there. That's absolutely insane. They're the only people in the country doing that. But as far as like the 100-milers go, as far as the races that I do and stuff, there's usually aid stations every, you know, 5, 6, 8 miles. Sometimes you got to go a 10-mile stretch without an aid station. And at those aid stations, they have water, they have food, they have electrolytes, all those things that you need to kind of keep going and to keep yourself safe, you know, to keep yourself from just knocking out somewhere on the trail. And they usually have a couple shitters there.
Okay, cool. So they shoot you a Cliff Bar and some water, and then you're off to go again.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, please on Twitter post. Do you take your what do you take with you when you're on this voyage of 50 to 100 miles? Do you have your phone with you?
I take my own food. I take my own water mostly. Sometimes I'll bring a change of socks. And I do bring my phone. I definitely bring my phone. I don't really check it though. I mean, I bring it in case I need it for any kind of an emergency or anything like that. But I do bring the phone along.
Well, on one of your breathers, make sure to take a picture.
Yeah.
I'll try and snap a couple pictures. I'm going solo this weekend. It's just me. Cool. So it's going to be up me to take all the pictures, but I'll post some kind of updates for sure.
Awesome. All right. Well, I will be back on the microphone a little bit later tonight with Chris Beeney. We'll be discussing this upcoming Fab period for week 7 of, you know, fantasy baseball. So we'll be talking that. Matt, I know you have your two-step article that'll be coming out, tonight or tomorrow? That'll be coming out, and then I'll shortly follow you once your article is out with the Fab article at ftnfantasy.com.
Yep, you got it. Thanks, boys. This was a lot of fun catching up. Episode 38. Hopefully, we'll be back after Brock has conquered 50 miles, kilometers, you know, 100 miles, who knows? And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Later.
Later.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.